Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 25.
Yep.
Quarter century.
Quarter century.
That's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we should have a quarter century party.
We're just the party animals, aren't we?
We have a party every episode, apparently.
Yeah, last time was the Trace Ocho party.
We just continue to celebrate our continued existence.
Yeah.
Every week is a new birthday.
It's true. Because we are reborn from moment to moment.
We are both phoenixes? Feni?
That feels right.
Feni.
That
sounds terrible.
I'm going to say that to everyone. Be like, Feni. And they're going to be like, what? And then, just when they least expect it, glitter in their face.
Glitter bombs. They make everyone really happy.
I don't know if by happy you mean the opposite of happy, then
completely
you are
completely enraged, you
yes,
mean?
Yes, that's what you mean.
The best thing to do it is if you just go into like a subway in a big city and find a really professional looking guy in like a really nice suit,
mm-hmm.
and just throw glitter on him.
Mm-hmm.
They love that.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
They will not beat you to death in like a murderous rage or anything.
I'm going to do it and tell them it was your idea.
I think they'll just beat you to death by proxy.
You don't think they'll come find you?
No, I think
they'll be like, this Robbie guy, why does he tell people to do this?
I don't think they'll make it that far.
Mm.
So Handsome Bites, don't throw glitter on people. We're not advocating that. Okay, Eric's advocating that. I'm merely warning you, if you do it, you may be injured.
It is entirely probable, but you know what? You gotta live on the edge.
We are recording this a day late. We are not a dollar short, though.
Well, that speak for yourself.
And Eric had suggested earlier that us not recording on our typical schedule may have killed Lou Reed.
It seems likely. Although, since Halloween is still fast approaching, he will probably haunt us.
Yeah. So, we're sorry? We're sorry, Lou Reed?
Well, now you can get haunted by Lou Reed for Halloween. You should thank us for that.
I don't think that's a good thing.
Oh, come on.
What's he gonna do, like lay in bed and do heroin?
Is that what he does?
I don't know. I know he has done that a lot. I know his drug addiction has been like the stuff of legends.
I don't know anything about Lou Reed other than I don't care for his music.
I don't even know that much.
I thought you would know that.
I've never listened to Velvet Underground, never listened to Lou Reed extensively enough to know that I do or do not enjoy his music.
I don't have a good sense of the Velvet Underground, but I know what I've heard I did not care for, and I Spotify'd some of his music today, and
you did not enjoy it?
I was not blown away by it. No, I don't think it's for me.
I know it's very influential among many people, and many people in my circle.
Yeah.
My social circles, no, but
and mine as well. But that's it's not for me.
I'll check it out eventually, along with, you know, the dozens of television shows and hundreds of movies and books that are passing me by as our culture slowly turns into a culture of steam.
A culture of steam.
So many new ideas happening so quickly, I just can't keep up.
Yep.
Because I am not, you know, vapor.
I mean, no one is going to sleep 14 hours a day for me.
If I could just get a substitute sleeper.
Yes.
Who could sleep for me.
I mean, that works, right?
You can pass on bodily functions to other people, right?
I thought you were going to say fluids.
Well, you can do that.
I mean, know you can do that.
That's easy.
I've done it many times, mostly to your mom.
That's not very nice.
I know. I felt bad saying it. I totally didn't.
Good. You feeling guilty is worth it.
I just said I totally didn't.
Oh, you liar. You betrayer. You Benedict Arnold, you. Mm-hmm.
Hearth's betrayer.
We should probably move on from our... I'm not even sure what weight this is.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite thing.
It's your favorite thing?
It is my favorite thing.
I'm going to have to... I hate to break this to you, Eric. But it is time for checking in.
Well, this is... That's like my third favorite thing, so...
It's not my favorite thing.
Are you checking in with your favorite thing?
No, I'm not checking in with my favorite thing. I have, I guess, two things to check in with. One is, I was in Orlando in the weekend, so this is a recommendation for people who are near Orlando or visiting Orlando, which is quite possible, considering it is quite a tourist destination. There is a bar near the iDrive, which is like Disney, Universal, SeaWorld area, called Player One. And it is awesome. It is a video... There's been a kind of a uprising of video game bars, barcades, whatever you want to call them, where you know, there's drinking and video games. And Eric and I have visited one prior, which was not that exciting. Mm. This one is awesome. You pay $5 cover charge, and then everything, all the video games inside are free. And they have probably 40 or 50 coin-ops, including a Turtles in Time, X-Men, Simpsons, many old-school coin-op machines like Galaga, Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, plus multiple fighting games, a lot of combination of like weird miscellaneous coin-op machines. They also have stations set up to play Super Nintendo, Nintendo, Sega, Dreamcast, all those on emulators with like all the ROM, pretty much every ROM possible loaded in. And then they also have high def monitors with chairs that you can basically rent a game while you're there and play new games, new releases with your friends while they have like a really impressive collection of craft beers, a liquor bar, and non-alcoholic beverages as well. Plus, like, Rock Band, Dance Central, games like that. They did have... Unfortunately, they had a pinball machine that got broken. And the sign on the... Even the sign on the machine was like, "I'm sorry, an asshole broke my lever or handle or something." Yeah, and you could sit at the bar, ogle girls in skin-tight cosplay costumes, and play video games, like, at the bar.
I like every word you just said.
Yeah. It's a pretty awesome place, and the only thing is it's like near iDrive, which is a pain in the ass. Anyone's ever lived in Orlando knows that it's a pain in the ass to get there, especially on weekend nights because just there's so many tourists. But I would definitely check it out if you are in the area next time. Eric and I are both in Orlando and not doing anything else. We're definitely gonna go because Eric will probably just want to like live there.
That's fine. My lease is running out soon.
Just move in.
Yeah. I mean, they probably think that's a great idea, right?
I think if you talk to the owner, you probably just go, "Sure, yeah, come on. You can sleep on top of the Donkey Kong."
Well, that's I've been waiting for someone to tell me that my whole life.
So there's that. The other thing is Eric and I were at a Halloween party.
Yes, we were.
On Saturday.
Lifted you over my head and you tried to hit me with a hammer.
I didn't try and hit you with a hammer because I would have succeeded.
Well, thank you for not hitting me with a hammer. Why did you have a hammer?
It was there.
You just had a hammer in your head and someone decided to get drunk and pick you up.
Someone named Eric Goodnight.
Yep. Eric Z. Goodnight, even.
Eric Z. Goodnight. We got to be specific.
You
got to
differentiate between all the other Eric Goodnights.
Exactly. There's it's like a legion of them, multitudes.
Yes.
But Eric, you were dressed as, how would you describe your costume?
I was dressed as me.
Eric was dressed as him. It's a clever disguise because he looked like, you know, the most manliest man alive, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, he looks like that every day.
I do what I can.
It's tricky,
yes,
to differentiate. You don't normally wear the peacoat.
It wasn't a peacoat. I don't even know what you'd call it. I don't know. It was kind of like a parka, but it's like a thin parka. I don't know.
It's a very fancy coat.
It's a cool coat. I really liked it. I was dressed a little fancy, you know, to mark the occasion. It's not. I wasn't dressed like it was karaoke or anything, but it was. I dressed up a little bit.
But you're not a farmer.
No, Lord, no.
Exactly. So I mean, you have to dress up because you're.
Clearly.
You're a sophisticated man.
Yes. That's, you know, we've got and to keep up appearances, don't you
exactly.
know?
Exactly. And my costume was MacReady from The Thing, who's Kurt Russell's character, from the 1982 version. Not the 50s version of The Thing from Another World, and not the recent prequel of the same name, but the 1982, the best version, in my opinion, of The Thing, where Kurt Russell plays a badass. So I was dressed as him. I didn't have time to make a flamethrower. Next time I do the costume, I'm going to engage and spend the time and put it together. It's really a matter of time more than money. I mean, most of the equipment is like PVC pipe. It's just taking the time to glue all that crap together, sand it down, paint it, make it look nice, put the little added touches to it.
I know. Just the thought of making a fake flamethrower got me all excited.
It did, Eric. When I actually posted that on Facebook, Eric was the first one to respond, and he responded in detail. Like, yeah. here's a picture, here's some diagrams, you could go to Home Depot easily. Here's the list of things you need. You need this, this, and this, and this.
Yeah, it brought out the Adam, my spirit animal, Adam Savage.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, instantly, I'm like, you are definitely the Adam Savage. You have raised all my doubts. Of you being the Adam Savage of us.
Yeah, it I don't know what it was. It brought it right out. I'm like, ooh, I'm gonna make a flamethrower.
Not even a real one.
Yeah.
Just a prop.
A prop's good enough.
Exactly.
That's what the man does. He makes props all day. He does
badass props.
Yes, he does.
But I thought, since this is gonna be probably coming out right before Halloween, we could both we could talk about some horror movies of our choosing,
mm-hmm.
make some recommendations or anti recommendations even. So I'm gonna have I have a pair of movies. Well, I just said I was MacReady from The Thing, so I'm definitely suggesting The Thing is probably one of my favorite movies in general, not even of horror movies. I know Eric hasn't seen it. And I need to make it a point next time we are have a couple hours of freedom together. We need to sit down and watch it because it's an incredible movie. Not even an incredible horror movie. It's just an incredible movie in general.
I know you've said many times it's one of your favorites.
Yeah, it's
for anything.
I mean, it's not even just horror movies. I mean, I enjoy horror movies, not as much as I used to actually,
mm-hmm.
but. It's definitely my favorite horror movie. My other horror movie for another actually movie that, I mean, The Thing is definitely a movie that will, like, be, it's a scary movie. It's some gore, really, like, heavy paranoia, and I think a great movie that pairs with it very well, that it has a very similar, like, thematically themes of paranoia and gore, heavy gore and violence is Descent, The Descent. I don't know. Have you seen that, Eric?
The Descent? No.
The Descent. It came out maybe 2010, 2009, maybe even before that. I think maybe 2007. I'm not sure. It's a British film directed by Neil Marshall. He did the Blackwater Bay episode of Game of Thrones.
Hmm.
And and I think they're very interesting movies together, because the Thing is an all-male cast, and it's set in Antarctica, so it's they're in a very secluded area. The Descent, except for a minor cameo at the very beginning, is an all-female cast, and they are deep in a cave, and they both have very, like, kind of similar themes of infighting and paranoia and this in a very, like, a strange outsider creature attacking, you know, something they are not prepared for, and they don't know what to do. The Descent is also really horrific and violent and really good. Probably my second favorite horror movie. Both are excellent, I think, Halloween films. Not on the lighter side, though. I do have to say that. They're heavy, scary, gore-heavy movies. But I would recommend both of those if you are in the mood to watch something frightening. What do you got, Eric? Anything?
For what? For movies?
Sure.
A little film I like to call Ernest Scared Stupid.
I'm going to have to disagree with you on that one.
I can't say that I really enjoy it either. I do like quoting it. I do love the quote, "Not even milk can stop me now." Which is about the funniest thing I've ever heard in my whole life.
Not even milk?
Not even milk can stop
me
now.
Have you ever seen Troll 2?
No.
Okay. Then we won't have that discussion.
Okay.
You'd have to see the movie to even understand anything I was going to say about it, so disregard. It's considered one of the worst movies ever made.
Well, that's delightful.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't really care for these kind of movies, but we wanted to talk a little bit about just gore movies. Yeah, Zombie Dead Alive. Was it Dead Alive?
Dead Alive, yeah.
That's oh, God, that movie. You know, I like it, but I never want to watch it. You ever know, again. Like it's, and I'm not squeamish about gory movies. I just feel like I need to take a shower after I watch them.
Gory movies in general, or
well, no, mostly Dead Alive.
It is a very squicky,
yeah.
But I mean, it is kind of the birth of a genre.
Mm-hmm.
In with Peter Jackson, like a lot of his early films share kind of that kind of feel where it's like
right,
very so gory, it's like silly.
Yes,
like they call it splatstick.
Huh.
It's like basically like if Three Stooges, instead of them just like, you know, bopping people over the head with a hammer, mm-hmm. within a silly noise, like the hammer gets like caves in their skull and then their head explodes.
Yes,
like it. And that's like Dead Alive. A lot of his Meet the Feebles. Oh, that movie makes me. It's not nearly as gory, but it's Peter Jackson.
It's supposed to be horrid. I have not seen it. I know
some people really
it.
Like it. I hate it, and it has the same. It's not gory. It's just disgusting. Dead Alive, I thought was hilarious. I mean, it's not like The Thing and The Descent are both very gory, but neither of them are funny. Like, they're almost devoid of humor altogether. They're deadly serious, for the most part. But Dead Alive is so over the top with its gore. It's kind of, to people who haven't seen it and don't understand, I kind of, like, compare it to, like, the Black Knight scene from Monty Python. When he, like, you know, he loses his arms and his legs and just blood, like, shoots out like a spray. Where it's not, it's so unrealistic, it's like not, it can't be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I don't enjoy Zombie, really. Zombie's not a good movie at all.
No.
It does have a zombie fighting a shark.
Well, that's the meat of the movie right there. You're supposed to skip scene. Around. You watch the girl get her eyeball stabbed.
Yeah, that too.
You watch the girl skin dive, and then that leads straight into the zombie fighting a shark,
which naturally they're natural enemies.
Yes,
I mean it happens all the time. You hear stories about zombies and sharks. You know they share the same territories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it comes to fisticuffs.
It does,
even though sharks don't have any fists or cuffs. Although maybe they could have cuffs if they like you put a little tuxedo over their fins.
Yeah.
Would they have little shark cufflinks, you think?
I mean, you know, if they want to be fancy. And who doesn't?
Fancy sharks. They're not farmers either.
Mm-hmm. Sharks don't farm. They do not sow.
There's no farmer shark. Have you ever heard of a farmer shark?
Mm-mm. I think you missed my slick reference there, but that's fine.
They don't sow. I don't know what that's from.
You don't know the House of the Kraken?
House of the Kraken?
Yeah.
What, from Game of Thrones?
Yes.
I'm not colloquially. That's how you say that word.
Yes.
Colloquially.
Vaguely with your mouth. That's what you're trying to say.
Yes, just go. Just let it spill out like diarrhea.
Yes.
From your mouth part.
Good God. What is wrong with us?
We are also arguing about Nightmare Before Christmas.
I think it's a worthy argument to have.
I think so.
Okay,
I'm gonna pose this question to you, Hansmites, and you need to respond. We need to know what you think about this. I posit that Nightmare Before Christmas is a Halloween movie more than it is a Christmas movie. Eric has the other perspective, that it is a Christmas movie more than it is a Halloween movie. We want you to comment on this. Let us know. It's Nightmare Before Christmas. It takes place mostly in the Halloween land, and they revert back. They go through their little Christmas phase, and then they revert back to Halloween at the end. They spend very little time in the Christmas area. That'd be my argument.
Well, it's not called Halloween Before Christmas.
Nightmare. It is scary. That's Halloween.
Yeah.
Spooky. Jack Skellington. Santa Claus isn't the main character. Jack Skellington is the main character. Or Sandy Claus.
Mm-hmm.
You see those three people that cosplayed as the three little kids?
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
I mean, many people have done it. I don't know which ones really? In particular you're talking about.
Oh, most recent. It was like after...
I've seen some people do it really shitty.
No, they did it. They like had like wooden masks that were like 3 foot bit, 3 foot tall or something.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah. They were like custom.
Ran into a lot of them the year my brother cosplayed as the mayor of Halloween Town.
They attract each other probably.
Yeah, they had to take pictures together.
Well, obviously, you have to. So, yeah, we're officially, I think that's the end of our Halloween discussion.
I think it was officially the end a long time ago.
Oh, that's, yeah, it's probably true, but happy Halloween. I'll say that. Happy Halloween, everybody. Enjoy your pagan holiday.
Happy Halloween! I just wanted to do a voice.
Eric did a voice, so that makes it official.
Yes.
So, now that checking in is over, it is time for the floppiest part of the week. And that is weekly floppies. So, folks, we're going to start off with DC. And another month that we are not reading anything related to Forever Evil. I wonder why we're doing that.
Can you tell me?
It's bad and not good.
That was a great voice.
I know. We're going to start off with Eric's favorite comic book ever, Larfleeze, number 4.
Yay.
Written by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis, Scott Collins on art, Mike Atiyya on colors, David Sharp with the letters. Most of this book is Larfleeze in this big fight with all these reincarnated Orange Lanterns. They all hate him because he killed them and imprisoned them in his ring.
If you did that to me, I don't think it could hate you.
You really not sure?
I would forgive you.
You would?
I would forgive you.
You're a bigger man than all these space aliens.
That's true.
And you are a man. And these are not, they're not men. They're space
aliens. No, they're not. That one person is like a worm head.
And then the rest of the issue is in his Stargrave, his butler.
Yes.
Hanging out with I don't know what you want to call her.
Space lady.
Space lady. Yeah, god, space lady.
She's a goddess.
A goddess who's really ditzy. Has no memory.
Very forgetful.
And then they go to, like, robot steampunk world, where there's, like... I guess, is it supposed to be, like, a...
Sad crying robots for no good reason.
Sad crying robots with their sad, like, eternal leader. The dirge of all sorrows. Is it supposed to be, like, a Sandman, like, joke?
I think it is.
Yeah, I mean, it seems
it's
like...
It's starting to feel very Sandman, and I'm wondering if they're going to introduce, like, any more of these characters. And they're all going to be sort of themed like this.
I think my favorite page in this entire book is the one-page adventure of Tinkle and Scooch.
Wow.
These two weird little space caterpillars.
Oh, God. I don't know why that confused me so much. Yes, I do remember that. That was
They're hanging out. They're having fun. Everything's great. Gosh darn it. They both talk like Ned Flanders, the two space caterpillars.
You said a mouthful there, Tinkle.
And then Larf flees and all his alien foes crash land on the planet and murder them.
Yes. Because everything that's happy just has to die for no reason.
It has to die. So, the book continues to be very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. It's hilarious. It's goofy and silly.
And there's a space mummy.
What else do you want out of this? I mean, you get space mummies, space caterpillars, Larfy's being a complete jackass.
Yeah.
You got a worm head.
Worm head,
and then, like, looks like a langolier and a space mummy and a purple alien Cthulhu guy.
Mm-hmm. Purple Thulu. That's my favorite flavor of Kool-Aid.
It should be a flavor of Kool-Aid.
Yeah, it should be. It's the most eldritch flavor of all.
the art.
Nights you're feeling gibbous. These are your H.P. Lovecraft vocabulary words.
There's not enough racial slurs in there.
You're right. Let me say a bunch of them.
All in a row.
Yes.
But the art's still great.
I think there's some weak points.
Really?
A lot of it's very good, but all the segments, I don't care for the drawing of the goddess in this.
Really?
I thought it was stronger than the other ones, but all the Larfleece parts are really well done. But I don't care for the drawing of her in this book. It just isn't doing it for me. It looks rushed compared to the rest of the book. The anatomy is a little clunky.
I like the sad robot world, though.
Totally.
Steampunk sad robot steampunk world.
That's a solid page for sure. But the next couple of pages, they don't work for me. I think that the colorist has done great work, but. You know, it picks back up. It just as absolutely as soon as Larfleeze is introduced, the fight scenes are like amazing and really gorgeous.
And considering like how much orange there is, mm-hmm. making it still stand out.
It's very orangey.
And sell the action. It works out really well. I still enjoy this book greatly. It's a shining beacon of light in the DC landscape. It avoids all the other DC-isms of, like, grim superheroes. And it's kind of, like, fun and silly and stupid. And not stupid in a bad way. Like, you know, ridiculous stupid.
Stupid like us.
Like us. Stupid like us. We can get behind that.
Yeah.
So I am a buy on Larfleeze number 4.
It gets the stupid like the handsome boy seal of approval.
Exactly. So that sounds like a buy from Eric as well.
Totally.
Totally. Double buy on Larfleeze number 4. We'll probably, you know, love Larfleeze forever until DC figures out that there's a book out there that isn't grim and deadly serious. So
Larfleeze will love you long time.
And our second DC book of the week is a new book. We haven't read this one before.
feels kind of out of nowhere to me. I wasn't expecting it.
I wanted to give it a shot, and so I saw I was picking up on a new arc, so I figured, well, let's try it out. Let's see. I know that they're trying to make this character important. And, I mean, they're fighting a good fight, I guess. It's Aquaman, number 24, written by Geoff Johns, art by Paul, or pencils by Paul Pelletier. I can never say his last
Pelletier.
Name. There you go.
Is it Pelletier?
I'm not sure if it's French, like Pelletier or something like that. Pelletier, right. One or the other. Sean Parsons in the inks, and Rod Reese colors, Desi Cianti letters. And this is Geoff Johns. He's trying to do for Aquaman what he did to Green Lantern, and try and make it like an epic thing. And the story is basically we're delving into Aquaman's, like, his destiny and his history and the secret history of Atlantis and all that. A lot of this story is in flashback, and we learn about his lineage and his true descendancy, I guess. What do you think about this, Eric?
It wasn't a bad read. It just kind of falls flat for me. I don't know. It's okay. Nice art. The story is, I don't know, sort of predictable and still manages to surprise me. It's just kind of fair to middling on this one.
I have to agree with you. It's not bad. I enjoyed the art, and it seems like they're going for like a Game of Thrones thing here.
Mm-hmm.
With all the, you know, I mean, most of the story takes place when Atlantis was still above ground.
Yes.
Above the water. And that, I think that was the thing that really like kind of cut me off of this, where they just kind of like, oh yeah, they sink Atlantis, and then this is how they explain how people were suddenly able to breathe water.
Mm-hmm.
90% of the population of Atlantis died as their lungs filled with water. But there were those that survived. What? Seven kingdoms of Atlantis broke apart. Four of them were lost, only three survived. And to survive, the beings of these kingdoms evolved. What do you mean evolved?
Well, here's the thing, Robbie. You probably didn't know this, but 10% of people that drown actually, like, learn to breathe water.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, that's...
Like they have, like, secret gills?
There's no secret gills. I mean, they just evolve them. That is a fact. Oh. That is a true fact of science.
True fact of science. Well, I mean, since you are an esteemed scientist.
I am. I'm very steamy.
Are you part of the culture of steam?
Probably. That sounds like me.
It does.
A culture of steam.
It reminded me of that Futurama episode.
Yeah, the Coca-Cola.
Well, the caffeine sped it up, and they're like making fun of the fact.
Yes.
It's like they wrote that Futurama came out like a decade ago, and it's making fun of this comic.
I think so. I mean, there's time travel in Futurama. That's probably true.
They traveled enough. It's set in the future, so they already had this comic. They read it, and then, they made that joke, you know, after the fact. And the twist at the end, I have a feeling we're supposed to feel more impact from that than it actually did impact me.
Yeah, how he's like, you're the bad guy.
And your ancestors were the villains. I'm like,
blah, blah, blah.
I'm like, oh, that's not that big of a twist.
Yeah.
And it's been done before. Right off, off the top of my head, I think of the Knights of the Old Republic Star Wars game. They use that same kind of idea. What's the truth? You are the son. You are the villain. Whatever.
Well, I think it's ridiculous. Who in the hell would actually say your ancestors were the villains?
no one.
Yeah, I mean,
that's like he's like aware that he's in a story.
Yes, exactly. So like you, your ancestors were not the protagonists.
They were. They were the antagonists.
Yes.
Dun dun dun.
Dramatic sounds.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I like the art. It's, for DC, like, a superhero book, it doesn't look like Jim Lee drew it. Which, like, half the books look like Jim Lee drew it and he didn't.
Yeah.
This looks, it accomplishes the feeling of, you know, superheroes. I mean, I really like the page where, you know, Atlantis is falling into the ocean. Like, it's all shattered.
Mm-hmm.
There's lovely detail on all the buildings and stuff like that.
It is. It's a nice looking book for sure,
but
I don't think you can. It's not enough to merit buying it.
No,
to overcome all the dumbness in this book.
Yeah, why
are they in like a little pup tent in Antarctica?
Well, that's all you need.
And then, yeah. I mean, an Aquaman doesn't even fucking need a shirt. He's just I'm an underwear model, and I'm in Antarctica.
His nipples must be freaking hard as a rock.
Yep, they can cut glass.
Well, I think they can cut glass anyway because he's an Aquaman.
That is a weird power. I didn't know that was something he could do. I thought all his nipples could do would be talk to animals, animals.
The thing with Aquaman, like, I don't think this is the way you make this character, like, popular. Like, make him all, like, you know, heavy with, like, a big mythos. I think you gotta embrace the goofiness a little bit.
Hmm.
You know, embrace the fact that he's, like, Aquaman. Like, make it fun. Just make it fun. Make it like Larfleeze. Make it, like, that kind of feel.
I don't know. I question that. So you're talking about, like, a Batman 66 book?
Yeah.
Is it 66? I can't remember the number.
It's 66, yeah.
Okay. But is it like a Batman 66 Aquaman? That's what you want to see.
Kind of, yeah. I think that would work.
Hmm.
I mean, there's already so much of this. It's kind of saturated it. The market with this kind of, I mean, DC's trying to make every big superhero of theirs like the same. I think making kind of the most popular Aquaman has been the one in the Brave and the Bold cartoon, and he was really I don't know if you're familiar with the.
I think I saw that episode. He was like a little. He was kind of like a little cheesy.
Yeah, he's like a cheesy, like really, yeah. Like he lives. He acted like Hercules from the Marvel Universe,
right?
Where he drank a lot and he fought a lot and he liked a lot of women and that kind of like just a big extroverted.
I could get behind that as an Aquaman.
See, something like that even. Yeah. That doesn't, you know, it's different. But this, I can't. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not worth buying, I don't think.
No, there's nothing really amazing about it.
No. And it's to be concluded. We got one more issue and that's it? Of this story?
I guess.
I thought it was building to something bigger. Okay. If it's not obvious, neither of us are. We are both do not buys on Aquaman number 24.
No, I was going to reverse myself.
You were?
At the last possible minute.
About face.
You know this says chapter 6, right?
Does it?
Mm-hmm. Death of a King on the... What page is this? 7. Page 7 really? Says chapter 6.
Well, it starts off with him being asleep for 6 months.
That is always, you know, a good middle point. So you do 5 books worth of things, then you take a nap for a couple months.
A couple and 6. 6 months of sleep.
You know.
Regardless of where it is in this story, we are both not biased. Next up is a book I have anticipated quite heavily. Probably my most anticipated book of the year. Been hearing about it for a while now.
They really have been teasing about it forever. And I saw that. I knew that it came out this month, and I thought you were gonna miss it, and then yeah, there it is.
This is Pretty Deadly number 1, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art by Emma Rios, with colors by Jordi Belair, and letters by Clayton Cowles. This book is hard to describe. I simply, it is, I mean, I'll try and put it simply, it's like a gothic western.
I was going to say it's like a supernatural western.
Yeah. And that's the best way you can describe it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little, I think in its actual, like, inner processes, it's a little more complicated than that, with a lot of different narrative shifts and, you know, kind of mythos, what kind of, where it draws upon its mythos and stuff like that. You know, but at its core, like Eric said, supernatural, western, gothic. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it draws upon gothic horror kind of stuff, and it's definitely a western. It starts off with a bunny and a butterfly, like as the outer narrative construction. The bunny and the butterfly are the beginning. They're like having a bunny and a butterfly are having a discussion, and they then that shifts the narrative to this troop of travelers who are like a performance troupe, but they are more than they seem. A girl in a vulture cloak along with this blind man. And then they tell the story of who is functionally the main character of this, the Ginny, the daughter of death. But you really don't get see her even until the last page of the story.
Yeah, it's very different than I was expecting from all the teases.
I wasn't sure what to expect, but I still really enjoyed it. I really liked what they're building here.
Mm-hmm. No, I think they got a nice, very interesting cast of characters. I actually wanted to write a story very similar to this one, so I'm a little depressed to read it. They've done a lot of things that I wanted to do in a comic book, and they're doing them very well, like so well to the point that it would not make sense for me to ever do my story now.
That's not necessarily true.
No, I couldn't do it right on hot on the heels of this, which is one of the biggest indie books of this year.
Well, The Walking Dead did not stop people from continuing to publish the zombie stories.
Yeah, well,
actually, it really just helped people, you know, create more zombie stories. Aside from that, yes, like Eric said, this is done very well, and you get a very interesting cast of characters, and they haven't even really introduced the main character.
Yeah,
to a certain extent, you see.
Assuming she is the main character,
I from what I've heard, she is the main character. But I mean, presumably all these characters are the main characters. I mean, they all get equal time.
I was imagining she was going to be sort of like an outside force, even though she's. I mean, she's going to. I don't know.
It's hard to say. We don't know.
No, it's certainly true. I mean, in my head, she's going to be sort of acting on other characters, and the story is about them reacting to her. It's sort of like the way the Sandman story is told. Not in everyone, but you know, what Sandman stories have you read? Have you finished
I'm through like the third or fourth story.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of stories at that point where he's just sort of an outside character, and it's shifted to the point of.
Think this book may. Kelly Sue has already said that they have the initial arc scripted and pretty much there. She said they didn't release this book until they had three issues done.
Mm-hmm.
So they at least have three done now, and they're working, I think, on a fourth and fifth. And then if the book sells enough, they'll continue to do more of them after like a break. And considering this book is already sold out, first printing of this first issue sold out, I imagine that, I mean, as long as it continues on that course, it will get picked up for an ongoing. The art is amazing.
It's very, very good. Nice brushwork and very solid, expressive drawing in the faces. It's interesting because the art is clearly, it's got a lot of different influences. You know, I would say that a lot of Japanese influences, but it still feels pretty Western. But I mean, I would say there's probably some French influence in there too.
Well, Western movies and Japanese movies,
mm-hmm.
and imagery and iconography are very closely tied together. I mean, yeah. A lot of Western and cowboy stories are directly influenced by samurai stories and
oh yeah, absolutely.
And stuff like that. So I mean, it's there. I mean, even the the mythos of this story could be, there's definitely Asian, Eastern images in this Western story. The storytelling, I really like it just because it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not simple.
Yeah.
It's layers upon layers.
Mm-hmm. It could easily be too much, but I think it's done pretty well.
Yes,
it makes me think of Coffin Hill, whereas this works for me, and Coffin Hill absolutely does not.
I think this is it left things out.
Yes,
it hinted at things. It gave it room.
Yeah, absolutely. Like if they had put in a bunch of huge sections at the end and had not made, what the hell's her name, if they had not left it so mysterious, I think it would have actually worked worse. You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
I mean, not that I don't want these things explained, you gotta tease it a little bit. I don't know, it's very, very good. I'm seeing, are you familiar, have I talked about it? The Mobius Western,
yeah,
called Blueberry.
I don't know. You haven't referred to that by name, I don't think, but you've discussed, obviously you've discussed Mobius before, but
yeah, I'd say there's got to be some influence, because when you look at seminal cowboy stories, that is one of the most important ones. And I would say, knowing the way this artist draws, there's got to be some influence. They were looking at some Blueberry.
This is, again, it's story's really good, interesting. Mm-hmm. It's good mystery, really heavy imagery, and the art is gorgeous.
Yeah, I'm very thoroughly looking forward to the next issues of this.
I've been looking forward to this as long as it's been announced.
Yes.
And this has met every expectation I had. I cannot wait until we get the rest of it.
Yeah.
I think there'll be 5 issues in the initial arc, I think, and then hopefully it continues to sell well, we get more.
So definitely buy it, damn it.
Yes, we are both definite buys. I do want to say that I don't know, you probably didn't pick up on this, Eric, because you don't, hit the news sites nearly as much as I do. There was apparently, it's not even necessarily, it's hard to say if it's true. There's a lot of stories online about this comic shop in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Comic Inc.
Mm-hmm.
I-N-K. And they, of an overzealous, clerk, ripping up the book in front of people because he thought it wasn't worthy of them buying it. An Image actually released, a memo to the press saying, oh, yeah, we heard about that, and, we're not going to do business with them anymore. Here's a ton of stores in the area that will be selling our comic. And actually, Eric Stevenson, who's, one of the head honchos at Image now, has said he had some bad experiences in the past with people who worked there.
Hmm.
So since Image Comics responded, you would think they would have verified some kind of report from it. But obviously, this book is amazing. I don't understand how people would rip it up. I don't care if you hate a comic book. There's no excuse to rip it up.
I'm totally going to rip up my digital copy.
If you could do that, I'd be impressed.
I could print it out and rip it up.
You could. I had to add a second indie book of the week when I saw that both of these books were out. There's a couple other books I wanted to do. This is really, really good week for comics.
Totally.
But I added Rat Queens number 2. We enjoy the first one, and I like reading these books along with Eric because I know that he liked it too. And this is, again, this story is by Curtis J. Weib. Art and covers by Rock Upchurch. The guy's name we love so much.
It's a pretty special name.
Yeah. And then letters by Ed Brisson. And this is, we see the Rat Queens fight a giant troll and get drunk.
I mean, why not?
That's really... But my God, do they up the violence in this one?
It was pretty fucking violent last time where, like, that guy got stepped on.
He got smushed. He got, wasn't it, like, Scorch or something?
Probably.
I love the sound effects in this. They really add to the overall flavor. We get plunks and shinks and shicks and splurches. We got another splurch. Splurches are good.
I just found it.
Splurches are good.
That's when a wee person stabs your eyes.
Stabs when you a wee person plunges daggers into a troll's eyeballs.
Yeah.
You hear splurch. And again, there's several laugh out loud moments for me.
Several lull moments.
Lulls. They call the little lady is a smidgen.
That's what?
That's what they are. They're smidgens. If you couldn't think of a cuter name for a peoples.
When
Betty, you're the sweetest smidgen alive.
Where do they say that?
That's on page number 10, also where they heal the one lady's arm that's cracked in half. Jesus.
Yeah, it's pretty gruesome, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Her arm is literally, like, dangling by, like, skin. Luckily, they have a healer. But there's something picking off all these mercenaries. And the few that survive this onslaught of these ambushes, they all get drunk together.
I mean, that's what you do, right?
I think so. I mean, isn't that how every D&D adventure starts is... They're all at a tavern. Apparently also smidgens sleep on the arms of armchairs.
We don't need a lot of space.
That's a good point. But again, the art's still really good and it services the story very well, and it's incredibly violent in a funny way.
The fighter girl is supposed to be a dwarf?
I don't think so.
She's short.
She is short. I don't know if she's short enough. I don't. Maybe not. Dwarven women generally have beards.
I don't think in this they do.
She may be a dwarf.
She's very stout, and I think that the artist kind of can't make up his mind about her body type. It fluctuates a little bit.
It does. She doesn't really have the dwarven facial features. She has freckles.
Freckles. She doesn't. That's why I'm unclear, but she's very clearly shorter than everyone else.
Well, not
except, except the little tiny person.
The smidgen.
Yes, the smidgen.
I want you to say that word.
You want me to say smidgen to you?
I did, but I am still a buy. I'm really enjoying this series.
It is certainly worth your money. I don't think it's as strong as the last one, but it's keeping my interest. I want to see more of it.
I could just have them, like, they are slowly working towards a greater kind of antagonist in this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's some conspiracy, because all these mercenaries were ambushed, but I could just, you know, them going on their everyday adventures would just be as enjoyable to me, so.
Right. It doesn't need some big overarching.
No.
No. I think I agree that it could just... I don't know. This could easily just be a web comic of people just dicking around.
Released some web only stuff too.
Okay.
If you follow their Facebook page, before it was released, they released some. I think it might have been collected at the end of the first issue digitally. I can't quite remember. But Rat Queens number 2. We are both buys. Go pick it up.
Buy it so hard.
Finally, we're going to Marvel. And we are doing the final issue of Venom, number 42.
That was the last one?
That's the last one.
Well, fuck.
I know. From what I read about at New York, you know, stuff coming out of New York Comic Con, big things are happening to Venom. This is not because of poor quality or bad sales. I think they just, editorial has another direction. Venom is interacting with Superior Spider-Man in a very specific way, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take the character in a different direction from what I've heard. And I mean, you see it at the end of this book. They have a promo for the Superior Spider-Man issue with Venom, and there's been like from I picked up, you know, on different threads of Superior Spider-Man of Peter Parker like still being floating around in his head. So who knows what's happening? But it's going to be big, apparently. But this is really an attempt at them to wrap up a dozen storylines in this. And
right.
Instead of Deus Ex Machina, we get, I don't know what the devil in Latin is, but we get an appearance by Mephisto, who kind of explains some things away. Which, I mean, when you have to sum up, you know, years of storylines in a few issues, bringing in, I guess, the devil isn't a bad idea. But you do get some sweet Crossbone Venom Mania action.
Mm-hmm.
And Mephisto summoning these crazy multicultural demons from Master Man out of his chest. He doesn't look too pleased about that. The Monsters of Evil, where you get, like, these little tiki demons and, like, a Minotaur god and what looks like Egyptian. Maybe not. I'm not really sure. But it's a lot of action, a lot of fights. It kind of leaves it on a, I don't know, how would you describe how it ends, Zerg?
It feels like it quits.
Yeah. I mean, I think they just ran out.
Yes.
Ran out. I mean, he just tried to go, well, I can't answer every question satisfactorily in this time. So here's an answer to some of them. And then, you know, let's hug.
Yes.
I am upset, I guess, that we didn't get... Because, I mean, did you read his letter at the end?
I did not.
There's, if you go past the letters page, Cullen Bunn's a writer. Mm-hmm. He wrote, a letter, and it talks about all the stuff he had planned, which seems like quite a bit.
Right.
So, he probably just went, I can't possibly give a good ending to all of it, so I'll introduce Mephisto, they'll explain some of the plot points away, and then we'll just kind of have them, you know, obviously things are going to continue to happen with these characters. Let's just try and wrap up their relationship to a certain, leave it on somewhere where they can jump off to somewhere else.
Right.
You know, wrap it up to a certain extent. You get Meanie and Flash hugging. You also get Flash unloading a machine gun into the devil's face.
Pretty cute.
Which doesn't do anything, obviously, but, you know.
Why would you think it would?
I don't know. Maybe it's wanted to, you know, Flash has some anger issues, and we do see, you know, I still enjoy the art.
I don't think this is its strongest issue.
No, definitely not the strongest one, but I mean, they're trying to...
It's good.
Yeah.
I think some pages are better than others, and I really don't like the way they draw Mephisto.
Really? Yeah, I'm not a big fan myself, actually, but... It's all right.
He looks like the man version of the robot devil.
His chin's too big. He looks like the mask.
Yeah, his whole head is too big. It makes me uncomfortable.
That's what she said.
Boo!
They're not saying boo urns.
That was not boo urns.
No, I'm... Because I've been reading this for so long now, I'm kind of a buy by default.
Right.
Because there's an ending. Even if it's not the ending I want, it is an ending. It's a conclusion.
So are you a buy on the caveat that you've actually been reading it?
Yeah. There's no point to buy this if you haven't been reading Venom.
Yeah.
It's the last issue. It does not introduce anything of note. For a new reader, it's just like a wrap up of these characters you've kind of gotten interested in, and hopefully they go somewhere after this book ends. Hopefully they relaunch a book, maybe Mania appears in another book. Hopefully Venom goes somewhere interesting with his crossover with Superior Spider-Man. I'm so hoping something good happens, because I've read all. I mean, it's 42 issues. That's a pretty good run, honestly. And this Flash Thompson Venom is. The most interesting Venom has ever been.
I agree, and I really liked Venom beforehand.
Yeah, I always liked the concept of Venom was always interesting, but Brock... Brock. What did I say? Brock. Eddie Brock. That's
Brock. Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar. Brock Sampson.
Venom. Brock Sampson. Brock. That's who I was thinking of when Eddie I said Brock. Brock Lesnar.
Eddie Brock. Well, I mean, Brock Lesnar and Brock Sampson are like the same person.
I mean, kind of. Brock.
They're big.
Brock
they're
Sampson. Big. Brock Sampson would kill Brock Lesnar.
Oh, he. Well, and yeah, in hand to hand combat. But I mean, they're both big meatheads who are like.
Yes.
You know, gigantic and blonde. I mean, Eddie Brock was never an interesting character himself. Like Flash Thompson, like is a character. He's interesting. You know, he's like war vet, got crippled, has like alcoholic. You know, he's an addict, recovering addict, has issues with his father and family, and he's fighting a lot of stuff inside as well as being this, you know, superhero. Eddie Brock and Matt Gargan and all other Venoms, the characters themselves weren't that interesting. It was all, I mean, Venom, the symbiote drove the action in all the previous Venom stories. That kind of Flash Thompson drives the action in this whole series. And I think that's saying something. I think it was a good run, and I hope he goes in a good place from here. So I'm a buy. If you are a Venom, regular Venom reader, I'm a buy. Otherwise, don't bother. Just stay tuned and see what happens with his Spider-Man crossover.
I think we agree on this stuff too much.
We do?
I think
Should we disagree more? And yell at each other?
Yeah.
Deep-seated antagonism somewhere?
Well, that it is included in the intro.
We were pretty antagonistic in the checking in section. I think we're the right level of antagonism there.
The right level?
The right level.
Ugh.
Ugh. Rah. We're going to jump into the last issue of the week, the last Marvel issue of the week, Savage Wolverine number 10. Art and is written and drawn by Jock, with colors by Lee Luffridge and letters by Chris Eliopoulos. I think that's how you say that. This is continuing Logan's saga on this strange alien planet with this little kid. And there's a lot more exposition in this.
Mm-hmm.
You get a little bit more information. From what I can tell, it certainly is set in the far future, I think. Is that what you got from this, Eric? Because that was my inclination the first issue of this. And it seems like, you know, it seems like this is in the far future, not, you know, anytime in the near future or current times or anything.
What led you to think that?
This is kind of the exposition in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Where it talks about, you know, the kid doesn't even know what a cheeseburger is. I mean, the kid has not been exposed to Earth. Mm-hmm. I think he's never been on Earth. So that tells me something. He's remembering, he's talking about these memories from Earth. And it seems like a distant past to Wolverine. Like things he keeps going back to. I'm not totally sure though.
Well, see, I picked up on a lot of that also, but it didn't necessarily spell that it was, you know, like a far future.
No,
it just seemed mysterious.
Yeah, it's. I mean the fact that it's on this alien world and mm-hmm. it's like this. Miss Shady Alien, like this shady. It's. I think the main fact is what sells me is that in the Marvel Universe, the only people with access to like spaceships that aren't mm-hmm. aliens
mm-hmm.
are generally like SHIELD,
yeah.
or
right.
like government agencies, yes. and or the X-Men or the Avengers. And these are just like some normal human corporation. I'm guessing it's a corporation. Trying to abduct Wolverine or kill Wolverine, and it seems like for that to come about, it seems like it'd have to be in the future.
Can I just say that I don't think Wolverine could live in space? I do not think he could survive in space.
You don't think so?
No. Like a lot of terrible things happen to you.
You vacuum in space. Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes you explode.
Like you dissolve, I think.
You don't think his healing factor could like
no.
stave it off for enough time for him to? I mean, he's
no,
not
I,
there long.
I don't think so because I think that it's at a level like below an organism. Like he couldn't do it.
From my really science fiction knowledge of vacuum of space, like apparently if you like blow all the air out of your body, it wouldn't do any, you know, serious damage immediately. It'd give you like 30 seconds basically. Like if you blew out all the air in your body and closed your eyes, you could survive like 30 seconds and then you would die. You'd freeze to death.
That sounds preposterous.
That's what I've read, you know, people asking like scientists, well, how long could someone survive in the vacuum of space? And they're like on a best case scenario, 30 seconds. If you like you do everything possible. And it's Wolverine, he has a healing factor. I give it the benefit of the doubt that he could. It certainly makes for good imagery.
No, it does, but space could kill Wolverine.
Well, I mean, it's not like he didn't take. He's not damaged. Like he looks tore up.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if it's any character that could survive it,
it's not Wolverine.
It's not. Who is it?
Because he would be fucking dead right then. I don't know. That looks.
Do you still like the art in this?
Yeah.
It's good.
It is very good. A lot of these pages are really excellent looking.
Yeah, I really enjoy the sequence with the countdown on the spaceship.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the numbers juxtaposed with the panels and the kind of.
The page with the explosion is really beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about different ones. I'm talking about where you get sucked out into space.
Well, yeah. There's
blood shooting everywhere.
Yeah, and that's then good.
I meant the one before the explosion.
Yeah, with the two and the one on it.
Yeah,
that's really good. But they're continuing. They're slowly unveiling answers, I guess, to a certain extent, and then you get even more questions at the end. So I'm very interested to see the last part of this. Certainly left on a good cliffhanger. Like, I want to know answers to, like, mm-hmm. What is this planet? What's happening? Why are these guys so intent on killing Wolverine? See, Wolverine's part of the 10%, Eric, that naturally survive in space.
They're going to evolve and become space fish.
Exactly. The space sharks that that were in the Thor book, those used to be Wolverines.
They totally did.
All those were Logan's clones. Logan's. And then they evolve into a race of space sharks.
Yes, they are racist space sharks.
Not racist, a race of.
Hey, okay. I heard what I heard.
So, Savage Wolverine number 10, I am a buy. Eric?
Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be part of this, yes.
You are part of
this. No, it's probably worth buying, so I'll go along with that.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the whole Savage Wolverine the series. It's a lot of fun.
I wonder what the guy that wrote The Physics of Superheroes would think about Wolverine in space.
In the vacuum of space.
What's his name? James Kakalios. It's like a very Greek name. I think that's his name.
I don't know. From what I've gathered, watching multiple science fiction movies.
That really is all you need to.
I know. I've watched like Event Horizon and Sunshine, and those people witnessed through space, and they were fine afterwards. Not really. I think they were normal people too, and they eventually got like killed. But whatever. We're a double buy. We are all unanimous on every book this week.
I reverse everything I've said, just so I can be anti-Robbie.
Anti-Robbie. So that's the end of Weekly Floppies. I know you're upset. We'll have to do it again next week.
Oh.
So, folks, lastly, we have another Nerd Boy Book Club. And in this episode, we are reading We Three by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. It is a story of animal torture and weaponization.
And who doesn't like that?
Who doesn't like that? I certainly do. But yes, it's We Three. It is a story about these three animals that are weaponized by the government. And then they are programmed basically to be able to break free by their trainer, handler, programmer. when the government is going to kill them. When they have a new upgrade. And that is, this is their story. It's like a, basically if it was Milo and Otis.
Hmm.
It's like Milo and Otis if they were cyborg weapons programmed by the government to kill terrorists.
It's like Homeward Bound.
Homeward Bound if the dog, like, could shoot missiles.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly stays in line with Morrison's whole environmentalism, you know, themes that he is, you know, he personally believes, and we've seen prior in Animal Man. This is kind of a little bit of an extension of a lot of things that he talked about in that. And we even see, like, a little rat in here with, like, a screwdriver head.
And who doesn't want to see that?
Yeah. This was my... I read this prior to this week, and I had said... I had suggested to Eric, what do you think about this, Eric? Do you like this?
It is disturbing and hard to read.
It is. There, I mean... These poor animals, dear God.
I know.
They're like, and they really, it's a dog, a cat, and a bunny.
Yeah.
And they really kind of exemplify the almost like national ideas of what those animals are. Like a dog is loyal and protective. A cat is kind of a loner and stealthy. And the bunny rabbit is just kind of cute and helpless. Clueless, kind of derpy.
Mm-hmm.
And the animals, man, you are rooting. I mean, that is probably the strongest point of this book because, like, you are rooting so hard for these animals. You really do feel for them. More than you would. I mean, it's a lot easier. Like, in a lot of comics, it takes time for, like, someone to build up trust and like, for you to feel for the characters, you know, human characters. In this, so like, all you have to do is show like a cute dog and a cute cat and a cute bunny. Like,
it's,
and
it's pretty, like, it's pretty manipulative that way, honestly.
Yeah, like you show them like they have wires and shit sticking out of their skin and like they're in these all, like these gigantic exoskeletons, and you're like you feel sympathy for them instantly. It takes like almost no effort. You're just like, oh, yep, I want these animals to escape, and I want everyone to test it on them to die horrible deaths. So you're definitely like rooting so hard. You're like, yes, yes, go dog, go cat, go bunny. It is a very difficult read. I mean, if you are an animal lover, like, it's pretty graphic at certain points.
Mm-hmm.
About the testing and the pure, like, cold, like, horror of this. I mean, it is also like, certainly a critique of animal testing in general, not just, you know, the military. It also, I mean, is obviously a criticism of the military and their, you know, kind of, like, cold search for more efficient weapons and stuff like that. I mean, and Frank Quitely did the art. He's worked with Grant Morrison multiple times, and his stuff is great. And I know you like Quitely, don't you, Eric?
I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
He's a strange artist, and I think a lot of people don't get him. But he's very, very talented.
Grant Morrison loves working with him. I mean, he's used him multiple times. He's in All-Star Superman, most famously.
Of course.
They work together. But I mean, it really does a good job of I mean everything. It's beautiful art.
Mm-hmm.
You're aware of people not enjoying him?
I think it's got to be the case. He's so out of the ordinary.
It is not typical comic art at all. But
yeah, I like to think that people don't understand anything that isn't Jim Lee.
A lot of people don't, though. You don't, it's...
So just sort of by default, I assume people don't understand, like, Frank Quitely.
Yeah. I talk to people who haven't read comic books since, like, the 90s, or people who love, like, current, like, love all the comic books that we mostly don't like, and there's a lot of them. And I'm just, I don't understand. I'm not sure if they necessarily don't like Frank Quitely, but he's certainly more challenging to an average reader than Jim Lee's art is.
Right.
And this book in particular, there are multiple gruesome moments.
It's tough to read this.
Not necessarily the damage done to the animals, although that is there. It's also them fighting these humans, and the humans are left. They're just soldiers, and I really like sometimes weird dialogue in comics bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
Like when a character doesn't talk like a normal person, and then you're you have to interpret it.
Right.
And you're like, what does that mean? These animals are can speak in very limited ways, but I really like how they do it.
How they talk like Ken has cheeseburger.
It's a mixture of that with programming language, kind of.
Right.
It's kind of like the dog speaks in and they all have numbers. They're 1, 2, and 3. The dog wants to obey. The cat's like, no. The bunny rabbit's like, whatever you guys say. To a certain extent. That scene where the dog jumps into the water to save the one of the guys on the train.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have legs.
Yeah, he's missing a bunch of them.
Both of them. And God, the poor bunny rabbit. It hits a lot of Grant Morrison thematic things. You see kind of this, the military is these animals working hard together, doing exactly what they're meant to, even though they've been perverted and deformed, and the government doesn't give a shit. It just wants to kill them because they got a new one, which is this giant
mastiff.
Mastiff.
It says it's a mastiff.
Okay. Well, there you go. Mastiff. I mean, I guess it's better that they didn't use a pit bull. There's already enough negative stereotypes about them. But this giant mastiff is just this war machine. But it's much more kind of a heartless killer. Do you think this ended satisfactorily, Eric?
I'd say it's satisfying to me. You know? It's about the happiest ending you could really expect.
Yeah, I think makes up for the really just the overall darkness of this. Is there's about as happy an ending as you're gonna get probably out of it.
Is they end up homeless?
Yes. Well, considering I was just seeing them out of that fucking armor was just a triumph. But God, these animals. Ugh. It really makes you hate humanity, kind of.
Well, it is a work of fiction.
I understand, but it's not. People do this. I know there's not. The military's not weaponizing animals like this because it probably wouldn't work. But at least not to this extent. But I know that animals get treated in medicine and animal
horrific experiments. I read about one where they taught a rat neuron to fly a flight sim. Yep.
Really?
That
Jesus.
Happened in the world.
It's I know you've seen Nausicaa. Yeah. It makes me feel the same way as Nausicaa does, where it's just you've got these innocent creatures, and just the horror of humanity, the nature of man is the villain of the book.
Well, I don't.
Although it also shows some good people as well. So, you do get a little bit. You get kind of a glimpse of light. Among all the other darkness in the book. Are you happy you read it?
Read what?
This.
Oh, am I happy that I read it? I thought you said, have you read it? Yeah. And I'm like, yeah.
No, are you happy?
No, I'm glad to have.
Would you recommend it?
So, I'm trying to think of a larger discussion about this kind of experimentation.
Oh.
And I'm wondering,
like, well, in warfare,
really in anything.
I mean, it's hard for me to say, you know, that all animal testing is intrinsically unethical, considering we wouldn't have a multitude of medicine that saves people.
Absolutely, a lot of
on a daily basis.
Of very important surgical procedures have come out of doing incredibly terrible things to animals. Really, what is kind of horrifying to think about is there's nothing intrinsically sacred about any form of life. You know, it is important for these experiments to have a code of ethics and have lines that shouldn't be crossed, but
yeah, minimize suffering
if possible. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, have you ever watched Penn and Teller Bullshit?
Very little. Yeah.
Yeah. Their show, they had a show about PETA and animal testing. PETA, it was mostly about PETA and like. Animal testing course. Came up, and I mean, PETA. They highlighted it by PETA, like, you know, has openly come out against animal testing of any kind. But then like they went on to talk about the several executives in PETA who have like. Medical issues that would die if they didn't use the medicine that came about from medical testing on animals. And they don't stop using the medicine because it came from animal testing. Because they would die. What's that, the Louis C.K. bit about, you know, like, we can have amazing things, but you have to be aware that a lot of the time it's built upon giant piles of pain and suffering.
That describes the world pretty accurately.
Exactly. He's like, you can go look at the Great Pyramids, but know that there are thousands of corpses in its foundation. Or, you know, you can have a wonderful, amazing phone that can do incredible things. Things that wouldn't even be believable, like, even 25 years ago. But know that there are people who make them who commit suicide. Because it's so awful working in those conditions at the Foxconn factory in China.
Well, there's probably more horrifying shit that goes into it than that.
Oh, absolutely.
You just think about the raw materials have to go into it.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say just in technology in general, like technological waste. Like, you see it, like, where is it? Indonesia.
Oh yeah,
Malaysia. One of the southeastern countries where it's just like this coastline is like riddled with, because they get basically gets dumped there because the country will accept it for enough money, and then all the unbelievably poor people will dig through it and don't care that they're poisoning themselves because they need the money to eat the next day. That's not really related to E3 generally, but
it made us sad, and now we're going to talk about everything that makes us sad.
Everything that makes us sad. E3, I think it really hits home more because it's fucking cute animals. The covers of each issue of this are like when the animals when they were like normal pets. Like, you see the dog when he was Bandit, and the cat when it was Tinker. What was the rabbit's name?
Pirate.
Its name was Pirate, because it has an eye patch. Oh my god! So god damn it! That fucking rabbit. I think the rabbit is the thing that actually hit home. I mean, a cat person, but that rabbit was the thing that really.
Well, I hate rabbits.
Well, then you must have loved.
I did. I'm like, fuck you, rabbit. No, I did not like the rabbit dying. But rabbits are jerks. They're terrible pets. I don't care what anyone says.
Well, I wouldn't say they're good pets, but they are fucking cute.
Well, yeah, but...
And that's what I mean. Like, it sells it because look how adorable this is. Like, look at these cute animals, and they've been just, like, spikes have put inside their bodies. And they got these giant, ugly armor, like, covering them.
This is such a weird idea for a book.
It's yeah. Grant Morrison. It's a really odd idea. But I like it. I would not tell anyone to read it, because it would probably bother some people. Like, I would not tell
cannot recommend to it to anyone. Only only recommend it to the most horrible of people.
If they either can stomach the idea of these poor animals getting right. tortured and, like, putting through all this hardship, or people who, you know, enjoy animals getting tortured, I guess this would be a comic book
for sure. Those people, they've got to be out there.
I know they're out there, because they're, it's crazy people. I don't know anyone who could, never mind. It's in my nature. I love animals more than people, for the most part.
That's why you buy all those conflict diamonds.
That's why. That's the mm-hmm. only reason to. So this we've gone off topic quite a bit in our discussion of We Three.
It's all these feelings.
It is. It's a very mm-hmm. heavy book, but one that I would definitely, as long as you can stomach it. I mean, you can buy. There's only 3 issues of it. They're available as either as a collection and on a.
I got them on Comixology.
I also bought them in Comixology. I mean, it's less than $10 mm-hmm. bucks for all 3 issues, and you get a nice story. There is a semblance of a happy ending, so there is that. It's Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. I think that alone, if you're a comics fan, should be enough.
Yeah, I think so too.
Definitely a recommendation. Not my favorite work from either of these gentlemen, but it's very solid, and it helps that it's only 3 issues. I don't think I could deal with any more pain and suffering mm-hmm. more than this. But it definitely brings up some. It makes you think. I think that's good. Anything that makes you think is good, for the most part.
Gives you the thinkies.
Gives you the thinkies. So that's available digitally and in paperback. That's We Three by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. Cute little animals. But I think that brings this episode to a close.
It is closing.
I'm not going to start singing this.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Because if you're listening to a podcast, this is a really abstract thing. You know, there's no place.
Yeah, it's like a mm-hmm. metaphysical place.
I mean, it's not even recorded in one place.
I mean, not really, no. It's like in several
places. Yeah, we're breaking the fourth wall here.
I know. So, folks, that was episode 25. Mm-hmm.
That is indeed what just happened.
One more week until the half-iversary.
The half-iversary. Mm-hmm.
And another part, and another party.
Just another one.
We're just going to keep throw parties every week. I think that's a good idea. So, folks, next week we are doing V for Vendetta. Alan Moore. Another Alan Moore book. You might say we are somewhat fond of that gentleman.
We make fun of him every chance we get, though. Oh, you mean the original author?
Oh, the original writer.
The original writer.
Yeah, it's by the original writer.
That's who wrote V for Vendetta.
Yep, that is who wrote V for Vendetta, the original writer. The original writer of V for Vendetta is the original writer.
That's so true.
Exactly. So that's it for this episode. You can find us at HansaBoysComicsHour.com. You can also find us on Facebook.com/HansaBoysComicsHour. You can like us there, leave us notes, let us know if Nightmare Before Christmas is a Christmas or Halloween movie. You can also email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. You can find us on iTunes, Handsome Boys Comics Hour. We are the only people there. Leave us reviews. Subscribe to us. Gets us more listeners. We really appreciate it. Any effort you make to spread the word, spread the good word. You can find us on Twitter at HBCHour, at HBCHour, at the Twitters. You can tweet us there. You can tweet me at Handsome... tweet me at Mixmaster Cereal, MixmasterCereal. You can also find us on Tumblr at handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. Eric, where can they find you and your things on the interwebs?
You can check my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com, and you can see most of the things I get up to on the old internets at ericzgoodnight.com. And if you want to tweet at me, I am Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R, Bad Example.
We listened to some Mr. Bad Example this weekend.
We certainly did. I didn't play the actual song, Mr. Bad Example.
No, you didn't.
I played Ballad of Frank and Jesse James.
We got some more that you want on there.
The Z.
Exactly.
The Z Vaughn.
Exactly. So until next time, folks, have a good one.
Rock and roll.